time in the Portland airport. But there was a 7-minute gap, and that was the 7 minutes behind that closed door. And that was the most important part. That's where the worst abuse took place. But the but the feds, they march behind closed doors, and it's like, we didn't do nothing. You know, as a part of my FOIA response, the feds had statements from each of the three agents, two of which were written after I filed the request. The third one might have been as well, because it was strange writing in past tense. They were just kind of saying, well, we just followed orders, and I was especially amused by the guy who was a behavior detection officer, because in his statement he said that I had told him that I was a blogger and an activist. Well, I told him I was a journalist. Maybe he's not familiar with that term. I didn't say who I wrote for, but I did mention I'd written about the TSA before. And it's interesting. There have been some times where I've gone through TSA and, I start getting a bit of the third degree. So I start asking them questions, very, very specific questions on their latest policies or this from the agency chief or whatever. And the agents are kind of like, he knows a lot. These guys in Portland were just like, I'm searching for a euphemism, but they were not the sharpest. They were not the sharpest TSA agents which I've ever dealt with, and they were just, focusing on, the rules say this, and there was no reason to be doing that. But it's interesting. So I did some more digging on that, on the false explosive alarm. And there's a couple different possibilities. One is because I've written about the agency before, and I've been denounced by the TSA chief in public a couple years ago. One possibility was maybe I was targeted because I've been an agency critic. That was part of my FOIA request, but TSA provided no information on that. I don't know that that's likely, perhaps more likely was, I'd use hand sanitizer that morning before going through the airport. Now, TSA's explosive detection machines are so bad that hand sanitizer shows up as if it was an explosive.
So when these scanners and machines incorrectly go off, how much of it is substances like hand sanitizer showing up as explosives? How much of it is that they're randomly set to go off every few people, and how much of it is just the machines and scanners don't work very well?
Well, that's an excellent question about the randomly set off. Just kind of, I don't know how often the machines there or elsewhere might have been set to go off randomly. The TSA lady in Portland had a part of the FOIA disclosure was that she mentioned in an email that they'd had a number of complaints about false explosive alerts at the Portland airport recently. But if you sit down and think, okay, how often are the explosive alerts, basically false alarms? The answer is almost always, because you've had, they've been doing this stuff for a number of years. There's not been any cases of TSA stopping someone from bringing explosive devices onto an airplane who had the intent to detonate or otherwise raise havoc. And I've asked TSA that a number of times. I said, are there any examples which you can provide of how the TSA screening stops someone from bringing explosives on board? That's classified. Well, hell, if those people had any success stories, we would have heard about it, and often and loud. So you have a system, and it's interesting. I mean, there was a very prominent case of a 10-year-old girl who was traveling with her father just after Christmas, and she apparently had a similar type of positive alert for explosives, and her father and she was had a very invasive and vigorous pat down in public, which her father caught on video. And you have this 10-year-old girl who's being going through utter degradation, and hopefully it doesn't traumatize her long term. I've heard from a lot of people who were, severely traumatized for a long period by what the TSA did to them. Basically it's a bunch of BS.
Well, and not only have we not heard about any success stories, but we constantly hear about failures, and one of the major failures we heard about was when they had some red teams go through and test the TSA's ability to find explosives, and they had a failure rate of 95%. So what happened with that test? What was that all about?
Well, something that the feds do, the inspector general occasionally does tests to see how effective the airport security is. And they have tester teams who will smuggle on either weapons and mock explosives to see if they can get them passed through the abracadabra full body scanners, which takes nude pictures of travelers, and then get them passed, and also get them past TSA security guards. And in 95% of the cases, the testers were able to smuggle the weapons and mock explosives through the TSA checkpoints. So, you know, a 95% failure rate is not close enough for government work. And it was funny to see how some of the TSA agents and TSA officials and former officials tried to spin that report. They were saying it wasn't really a fair test because those guys did a great job of hiding the weapons. So I guess TSA is only supposed to protect us against really dumb terrorists.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And the term that we've been using that I just want to make sure our listeners understand is the term security theater. So could you briefly describe what you mean by that term?
Yeah, security theater has become part of the American vocabulary in the last 15 years. And basically, it's especially in regard to terrorism, it's the government doing these elaborate and often very intrusive procedures that do nothing except make the government look like it's keeping us safe. And it's kind of an acid test is the wrong word. It's more like an inkblot test of how Americans view freedom and government, how they respond to some of these invasive, intrusive, and pointless TSA procedures. Because, you know, being a natural-born hooligan, if I'm standing there in line waiting for a TSA screening, it's kind of like I enjoy chatting up other travelers and seeing what they think. And you know, it varies according to where I'm traveling, where I'm flying out of. But very often, I hear so many people like, "Well, I'm just glad that they keep us safe." And I say, "Well, you know, they had a 95% failure rate in the last IG test. I'm glad they keep us safe and don't make trouble." Like,
damn,
you know,
don't make trouble.
That's it. That's it. And that's, you know, it's funny with some of the articles I've done. Some of the comments on the a USA Today piece I did about a month ago. I mean, it's like, okay, folks were just so groveling in their attitude towards the agency that you had to wonder, well, are these all TSA employees who are writing in, or their mothers, or their, you know, whatever? Because it's really pathetic to see so many people who think that the government has to have the power to basically physically intrude and, if not physically, molest people under this ludicrous pretense of keeping us safe.
So what sorts of people would want to work for the TSA? I guess there are people out there who get a thrill and a charge out of groping other people's private areas, but it must take a really sick type of person to want to do that. And even within that context, how frequent is employee misconduct, even by the TSA standards?
My impression, well, there have been over 500 TSA agents who have been fired for stealing from passengers. And from the comments that some of those ones that were fired have made, that's, you know, there's vastly more who have done it than have been caught. The TSA is a typical federal agency that often makes more effort to sweep problems under a rug than to expose them. And it's been able to claim, you know, national security for almost everything. Like, for instance, on these pat downs, these supplemental pat downs, and which I filed, I think, more than one FOIA request on, and I've gotten no information on this. But I was doing some cross-checking on this, and it turns out that the TSA and these supplemental pat-downs uses the same intrusive procedure on people's groins that the military guards down at Guantanamo Bay use on the alleged enemy combatants. And this is something which leaked out in a federal court hearing. The Pentagon was being challenged on its intrusive searches of some of the detainees. And the Justice Department lawyer said in open court told the federal judges that the intrusive searches at Gitmo were no big deal because it's basically like a TSA supplemental search, supplemental search in which the genital area is touched through the clothing with a flat hand, the same way the TSA does. Well, you know, maybe I'm a shy country boy, but I don't want people touching my genital area, you know, especially federal agents that, well, period. Let's just leave it at that. And this is the standard which the TSA is using to treat American citizens. They are, you know, the TSA supplemental searches, it's as if the travelers are enemy combatants at Guantanamo.
And one thing we also see a lot of with the TSA is racial stereotyping. They'll often pull people aside because of what race they are or because they might look Muslim. So what has the history been on stereotyping in the TSA, and why are they not criticized more harshly for that, especially in today's environment where people are very fast to decry stereotyping within government?